This is Val Farron.
And I am driving home. Let me check and make sure this is actually running. I thought I saw that it was. It is running. Good. Okay. So it's been a good week. I will be driving for a little longer today. But that's because I'm actually farther south in town. I ran by one of my beta readers' houses to pick up a book. I am editing now on book 22. That seems to be going fine. So I did hit my 80,000 words, which is where I wanted to be when in the first writing sprint. That's traditionally where I want to be. So got that done, even though it wasn't neat and clean like it has been. There were some, you know, a little bit of struggle sessions to get to that 80,000 words, but we made it there and it's fine. And I know kind of where I'm going for the rest of the book. So I have, you know, some things that are good. It looks like I came out on the wrong street here because I'm not used to this, but I'm just going to find myself a spot to where I can turn around, which is here. Go into the local neighborhood Walmart market and get turned around, and then we'll get headed back in the right direction. Anyway, so I did get to my 80,000 words, which is where I wanted to be. And then on Sunday, I transitioned over and started putting the manual edits in. So everybody who turns me back in a book that's just marked up, I just take all of those edits and manually put them into a PDF as comments and highlights. And then everybody who gives me a PDF back, I can just extract the notes that they've put into the PDF, and I can put it all together in one big PDF, and then I can just go ahead and start making all the corrections. And then after I make all the corrections, then I do a final read through and do any tweaking that I need to do on the cover. Although I don't think there's much tweaking to do on the cover, so it's in pretty good shape. And, you know, then we get the production version uploaded to Kindle Direct Publishing. And then we get, I'm waiting for someone to come, yep, try it, yep, there you go. Uploaded to Kindle Direct Publishing, and then I upload the Kindle version of it, and then I upload the EPUB version of it, and then we call it quits. Years ago, I used to upload to Apple Books, but it was just so complicated. You had to get your own ISBN and upload it with that, and you had to do this, and you had to do that. You had to use their special software. You couldn't build files any other way. Blah, 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 blah. After a while, it was just like, you know what? I don't think we need to do this. Not selling that many books anyways, and I don't need the aggravation. So that's why my books are not typically available on Apple Books or whatever, iBooks, whatever they call it. So anyways, I would expect I will get the last of the edits entered by this weekend, and then maybe a week to get everything transferred over to the corrections in the beta copy of the Word file, then maybe another week to do the read-throughs. And then get that uploaded, and then come July, go back to write the second half of book 23. So all that seems to be fine. All of it's puttering along. So it's good. costume, I have not accomplished much on the costume. Right now, I'm rebuilding the helmet for Marvin the Martian Day, and I just haven't been able to get much time on that between shuttling around Aiden and working on corrections and finances and all that kind of thing. But I'm hoping to make some good progress on that this weekend. Get a little extra time and get that done. It's interesting because the old helmet was made out of a much stretchier material than the EVA foam that I'm using. And so I'm using the old helmet as a pattern, but it had stretched a little bit in spots. And so when I cut it apart and then traced it, some things are not quite lining up. But you know what? We're going to make this work. And if we have to get a little of that putty and put the putty on it to kind of cover up some seams, we're just going to do that and get this done. I was able to get all of the, I think I mentioned this last week, kind of get all the weird kinks and everything worked out of the helmet because it had flopped over and bent some things. But I was able to get those all straightened around, and hopefully once I get this new helmet done, it's always good to do something once and to realize, you know, that wasn't so good. And so what I realized after doing it once was that I really needed to find some way to hold the pieces together instead of making them permanently seam together so that I couldn't get it off without cutting it open, because I'm always going to have to make adjustments and stuff. I mean, the engineering that I used to put together the Marvin the Martian head was not exactly planned. And it was not exactly the best engineering in the world. And if I had it to do all over again, maybe I would do some design with a 3D printer and put everything together with that. That probably would have taken far more iterations than I did on just using aluminum and bending it. And then if it didn't work, just bend it some more until it did work. But, you know, it's fine. It's fine. What I'm going to do this time, that I may have mentioned last time, is I'm going to build the helmet in halves and then put a Velcro strip in the center and then put the halves together, kind of put a back piece in the back to hold the halves together, and then up front, the front of the helmet actually bolts in to an aluminum section that has an extra piece of aluminum that goes around and holds Marvin the Martian's visor strip on his helmet in place. And so when I stick them together, attach the back piece, and then on the front kind of bolt everything together, it won't go anywhere, but it will mean that I can unbolt it, pull the Velcro apart, and make adjustments to the mechanism on the inside without having to rebuild the helmet. So that all is going to be fine. Just a matter of getting that done, and then as soon as I get all of that done, then just a second. Yes. As soon as I get all of that done and I get it all fitted and try out the costume, and if everything looks good, then I've got to get on to Mr. Potato Head. Because that's coming up, and it's coming up fast. It's mid-August. And I don't even have a 3D printer yet. And I have no idea what I'm doing with 3D printing. So I've got to get the 3D printer in. And then I have to figure out how to slice things apart and how to expand them and enlarge them and make big 3D printed pieces that are done in pieces and then are glued together. There's so many YouTube videos out there that I will just do what they say and we'll go from there. And there are people who have free 3D Mr. Potato Head models. And so I'll just get some of those and we'll just go. This should be fun. This should be fun. This weekend, of course, is National Donut Day. I had a friend tell me that I really needed to get a couple of buddies, or in this case, probably better, a couple of young women, to dress up as a tall glass of milk, and what was the other one? Something. He had another one. Cup of coffee? Maybe it was cup of coffee. Cup of coffee and a tall glass of milk. Get them to dress up as that and they can walk around beside me. So, you know, that could be done. And it could be done in the kind of traditional way. And that's why it would need to be young women. You know, because any of those mascot costumes that are trying to attract attention, they typically have stuff like that where the costume is basically arms and legs and then just something generic in the center. But we're not going to do that this year. Who knows what may come next year or the next year. There may come a day when I have companions that come with me on these types of things, but that day is not going to be tomorrow. I was telling people, though, that I haven't tried on the donut costume yet because the week's been just so busy, but that's actually the first thing I'm doing when I get home. I've got to blow up the big inflatable donut that I have, and then I've got to, you know, get the costume on, make all that work, make sure it's ready to go for tomorrow. You know, but it's that costume. There are certain costumes that cross all boundaries, and that's one of them. Donuts. Is there nothing they cannot do, as Homer Simpson would say? But it's donuts. It's like the vast majority of people who see that costume smile. And it doesn't matter whether they're young or old, or what race they are, or what persuasion they are. Hey, great costume. Thanks. Happy National Donut Day. You know, everybody likes it. Everybody likes it. So I might drop in at a few donut shops, or maybe one donut shop, celebrate National Donut Day, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So we'll see. We'll see. It should be interesting. I used to go down to, I've gone down a couple of years to a place here in town called Hertz Donut. And I guess St. George's Donuts is supposed to be, you know, really a big deal. And one year I went into Parlor Donuts. So we'll see how that's all going. And, you know, I may take the time to do a little traveling around to the different donut shops just to say hello and take a picture. Because it's always fun. Donut Day is fun. We do have a worship team, technical team meeting on Saturday. And I've told them I'm going to need a place to change because I'm going to be right out by their house just before it's supposed to start. And so I could run all the way back home and then go back out. Which, who knows, I may do that anyways if I have the time, because then I could drive my beloved out. We'll see. We'll see how it goes. It starts at 10, and from my house, it's probably a 25-minute drive to our music minister's house. So that means I'd have to leave at 9:30, and I'd have to record my video, and I'd have to get changed, and might be a little tight, but we'll see. We'll see. We'll try to make it work. It'll be fine. And I'm down to 3 weeks now until I go to part-time. So that's fun too. I've just been getting tickled with myself because this week I found myself looking at the clock at work and thinking, okay, it's 2:00 in the afternoon. If you were on halftime, you'd be going home now. It's like, come on, Phil, just hang in there for a couple of more weeks. Do your job. Finish strong. Let's go. So I've started taking over the support I took over the sport queue this week and just ran through all the tickets, got everything assigned that had fallen through the cracks and not gotten assigned. And one poor guy, I had sent him like a dozen tickets, and I wrote him and I apologized. I said, man, I'm really sorry. I said, but I'm getting these tickets cleaned out of the queue and getting them in our list. And he wrote back. He said, you know, this is the first time I've really been upset with you. He said, no. Hey, he said, oh, I'm just joking. He said, I feel like you're sitting there just poking me in the back of the neck. So, and then he sent me a gif of, you know, one dog just poking another dog in the back of the neck. But we were okay. He understood what I was trying to accomplish. So. And now I'm just, you know, staying on top of it so that when there's a problem and it comes into the IT queue, then I see it within just a few hours and get it forwarded on. So instead of it languishing there for a while, so, you know, that's better. It's been an exciting day today at work. There was a new department that was added to AGUSM that caused two separate errors, and then there were some changes in authentication to reporting services because they were having so much trouble with the new version of Windows losing credentials. They made some changes to help improve that, and in the process that broke one of our processes called bulk insert. And so we were running AGUSM and we thought we were clear, and then we got into the spot where we're producing files and it just wouldn't work. And then AGWM was running their stuff and everything was hunky-dory fine until we hit EOM2. And once we hit the second portion of the end of month process, it threw errors in four or five different places, and they were all, it's all the same thing. It's wherever we're using this read from file bulk insert type thing. It was just, you know. So that's actually out of my bailiwick. So once we got nailed down to as to what the problem was, and the database and the systems level people, you know, started working on it, it was like, well, go with God. I'll be praying for you all. So they're working on that. I think they're going to try to hit it again tomorrow, see if they can get this cleaned up. At the same time, because of the renovations that are going on the building, everybody's getting moved around. And so AGWM was actually trying to get finished up early so they could get financial services moved. And so it's like, oh man, you know, so... But you can only do what you can do, you know? So, step at a time. For this week, there was actually a topic I had gone ahead and put together notes on, and it concerned the darknet and AI and the projections for how much worse fraud is going to get on the internet because of AI. And some really interesting claims, because like one of the claims they had made is that it is estimated that fraud on the network, on the internet, is a $10 trillion a year business. And if it is a $10 trillion a year business, that means that if it were a country, it would be the second, third largest country by GDP than the rest of the world. And it was like some crazy, it was like the United States and China, and then internet fraud would be the in the rankings. And it was a very interesting topic. So I have notes on that. That's kind of the high point of those. But then today, as I was making corrections on book 22 and I had a podcast running in the background, I came across one of the podcasts I was listening to was by a woman named Julie McCoy. And it's interesting, she has started a company with some others called First Movers. And what she's trying to do is identify all the business opportunities that there are with AI and help people get their businesses going with AI, you know, while there's still opportunities. She had a copy editing business where she employed a lot of copywriters. And basically, as soon as she saw what the new chatbots could do in terms of that, she just pivoted. So you've got to appreciate that type of, you know, mobility and that type of clear thinking. Well, at this point now, she has a digital avatar that she's created of herself. And she has herself dressed in a blue Star Trek uniform that is original Trek. And it's actually Dr. McCoy. It's his blue uniform. And so she calls herself, you know, Dr. McCoy, the digital avatar of Julie McCoy. She has been recording podcasts with that for a while. And in fact, she herself was talking at the end of the podcast that I was watching about how that she has been having quite a few physical struggles. And so this was a way she could just make an avatar of herself. And, you know, it has her voice, it has her likeness, and she could keep putting out podcasts even though when she was having all these stress and fatigue problems. So, and what was interesting is at the end of this podcast she had put together, she was talking about how important it was to have God in our lives and how God, you know, is going to be the one that ensures that everything's okay. And she was giving very clear testimony as to the benefits of having, you know, moral frameworks in your life and et cetera, et cetera. So it's pretty interesting. She was quoting scripture. It was pretty interesting. But what her podcast was about today was about experiments that have been performed at Google in their quantum labs. And they've published peer-reviewed papers on this, and it's very interesting. Because Google has combined their quantum processors with AI that has been trained on quantum processor states, and then they have attached this AI to the quantum processor to monitor the quantum processor so that it can achieve coherence longer, so that it can be stable longer, so that it could be used for more things. Okay, well, that's all very, very interesting. And they have been able to improve by like 30% or 40% different functionality coming out of this quantum state processor, quantum computer, because this AI has been able to dynamically tweak things as it's monitoring the quantum computer. But then, in addition to that, there have been some like really interesting things that have showed up now that they can hold state on the quantum computer longer. So that was all kind of interesting. And in the process of looking through all of that, then I thought, you know, this may be more interesting of a topic to work on than the dark web stuff. And maybe I'll get back to the dark web stuff later. I'm getting my mail, and then I'm going to get pulled into the garage here. And then we'll see if we can't get this finished up. Okay, because I know I've been rambling for a while here. So one of the interesting things, looks like my beloved got herself another little, no, that's for Amber. Okay, so we'll take that and we'll take this. And do we have anything in the bottom? We do have something in the bottom. And this one is probably mine. Nope, that's Amber's too. So one of the things that showed up, and I'd like to go ahead and get in the garage because I'd like to get to my notes to where I could actually read my notes to get this right, because this is some very interesting stuff. And I was talking to a buddy about this, and I was having to hem-haw around a little bit and keep saying, well, if I understand this correctly, but it is amplifying what has been known and identified for a time already as the observer. What did they call that? The observer effect. So there's a lot of different ways that this shows up, and it has been documented, and it is reproducible, that the observer, whoever that is, can influence quantum states, and that it, in fact, it is the observer that causes a quantum waveform to collapse and to become reality. And in fact, this is, you know, kind of accepted standard lore in the whole quantum mechanics landscape, and it's the basis of something like Schrodinger's cat. Is Schrodinger's cat alive or dead? Because whether or not the poison is released inside the box that confines Schrodinger cat is dependent upon the decay of a certain particle. And that particle, according to quantum mechanics, is in a state of possibilities that are not decided until it is observed. So, in a way, an observer collapses the waveform. The question then becomes, does the observer's intent collapse it in a certain manner? And there is some evidence, proclaimed evidence that seems to indicate that that's true. So what I was telling my friend about was the random number generating phenomenon, where, as I understand it, that this is a repeatable exercise, that if you create a random number generator of a certain type, and that you have someone focus on that random generator as to whether or not it should produce even numbers or odd numbers, that if you leave it without focus, that it's basically 50-50. But if you have someone focus their intention on that random number generator, you can create statistically significant swings where the random number generator will actually drift towards whatever the intention of the observer is. There is a project. Maybe it's called the Global Consciousness Project. I don't know, where they have put random number generators all over the world, and they have been monitoring them. And one of the interesting things that I read about, I didn't follow it up to find the source material, so we're just going to hope that this is true. One of the things that occurred is that in the hours before 9/11, so this is in the hours before the planes crashed into the Trade Center, that all over the world, the random number generators shifted in one direction. I can't remember whether it was even or odd or what it was, but it was documented, supposedly, all over the world that there was something that caused an effect in these random number generators. So there is an observer effect. Okay, so after they got this connection of things, they got hundreds of qubits linked in ultra-cold, hypersensitive states, and during a recent run, everything broke pattern. The array began behaving as if it was not aware of its code, not of its surroundings, but of us. Yes, you heard that right. This is from the podcast. This sounds insane, but the data is real. Peer-reviewed and verified by independent physicists, it might be the first time we've detected consciousness inside quantum mechanics. This is the quantum, aka spiritual realm, at work under a microscope for the first time in history. So Google's experiment was meant to test error correction in entangled systems. The teams used 512 qubits arranged in a grid to observe synchronized collapses. In theory, these qubits should behave predictably, but something was off. During a side experiment designed with input from neuroscientists, they introduced a new variable, conscious observation. They asked participants to focus their attention on the system remotely using meditation techniques intended to intend specific qubit states. The results were bizarre. The collapse rates shifted entangled pairs, held superposition longer when watched. The probability wave function didn't behave the way it should have, not just once, but statistically repeatedly. That's when someone on the team asked, what if this isn't an error? What if it's a response? So they were measuring the length of how long they could keep things stable. They had some people meditating and focusing their attention on these, remotely focusing their attention on these states. And apparently influencing how long the probability wave function could maintain its superposition. So, you know, that's pretty interesting. And they go on to say what's weirder, and they do mention that Penrose and Stuart Hamhoff had proposed a radical theory in the 1990s that consciousness arises from quantum computations inside the microtubules in our brain's neurons. That they have proposed that the brain, in some parts, actually functions like a quantum computer. And that was like poo-pooed, but now, you know, they have found that there are some quantum effects in biological systems, which is pretty interesting that the system is designed in biology for quantum mechanics. So, so then they had the most shocking part of this series of longer trials when a quantum cluster refused to collapse. It remained suspended in superposition. No classic outcome or observable changes for hours until someone physically walked into the lab and focused on it. Then instant collapse. What's weirder is it didn't react to cameras, not to robotic triggers, or even to audio cues. Only when a conscious person entered the space and directed attention at it did it resolve into the classical state. The team repeated the test 32 times. Same result. The system somehow knew the difference between being watched and being seen. which raises the most uncomfortable question in modern physics. What if consciousness is the cause, not the result, of quantum collapse? And this isn't just experimental data, it's a philosophical earthquake. Quantum mechanics has always implied something strange, that reality doesn't exist in definite forms until it's observed. And she mentioned the double slit experiment, Schrodinger's cats, Bell's inequalities. I don't know that one. It sounds familiar, but I don't know. She said, we've tiptoed around the implication for decades, but if this experiment is right and consciousness plays an active role in shaping physical outcomes, then the universe isn't a machine running on autopilot. It's an interactive system with us in the loop. Okay, so then she said, let's go deeper, not just into the brain, not just into the machine, but into the very fabric of reality. Some researchers at the edge of neuroscience, quantum theory, and metaphysics are suggesting something truly radical. Consciousness isn't something the brain creates, it's something the brain receives. Like a radio picks up a signal. In this view, the radio, the brain isn't a generator, it's a resonator, an interface, a biological device tuned into a deeper layer of reality, possibly a non-local quantum field that spans the entire universe. So anyway, she goes on and on. It's a really fascinating. Dr. Julie McCoy and the actual podcast, if you wanted to go listen to it, is called, one moment, is called, view all, The Quantum Deception, Why Your Mind Is Not Your Own, Julie McCoy. It's 25 minutes long. Fun listen. It's a fun listen. This is very interesting, but what's most interesting to me about all of this is this fits perfectly with Colossians. Because at the beginning, Apostle Paul says that Christ, nothing was created without him, that all things were created with him, and by him all things consist. So the verb there is everything holds together, everything coheres because of the active participation of Christ. He is, to use the quantum terminology, the observer. He's the first observer. And I think I can safely say, knowing Christ as I do, that he is a playful observer. And so I have no trouble believing that he actually takes our observations into account and might cause our reality to shift based on our observations. In fact, he may have endowed us with enough capability and power that we would be able to affect the physicality of the world in a way simply by the power that he has invested in our minds. So another way to say this is that the supernatural could be woven right into this life. And in fact, it's not supernatural. It is, in fact, ultra-natural. It is the ultimate expression of our natural existence to do what we would call miracles. And they aren't miracles at all. They are simply activating those portions of our existence that we were always meant to activate. And I think this is why we see Christ when he is here and he's doing all of these miracles and people are shocked and stunned, and his reaction over and over is, why are you so shocked and stunned? This should just be natural for you. Because he was showing that he was active in this realm. And that part of what that demonstration was supposed to do was to validate his claims as to who he was. and our existence of followers as followers of Christ in this world, according to Jesus, was supposed to be manifesting just as he manifested. That we are supposed to be moving through this life in an ultra-natural way, and that we are demonstrating through our belief in him and our belief in his claims that healing is available, that guidance is available, that supernatural, ultra-natural patience and long-sufferingness is available. Love believes all things, hopes all things, suffers all things. I forget what the third one is. So it's really, really interesting that there is all that foundation that has existed for thousands of years in the scriptural record about our relationship to this world that Jesus was very clear about 2,000 years ago, and that now there's more and more evidence that, in fact, there is something about our existence here that is non-material, that can be affected by the non-material. And this in no way contradicts the concepts that Jesus was expressing when he was here. He would say, you are going to do greater works than I did. He would say, you know, whatever you ask of the Father, he'll do it. He would say to those who expressed faith, his reaction was, look at that! And he was surprised, but he never gave any indication that that was supposed to be out of the norm. For Jesus, the ultra-natural expression of healing, raising people from the dead, having a word of knowledge, all of those things, all of that was like air. Were it walking on water? That was just, of course he can do that. Because the world that he has created responds to the intent of the observer. And it's something that I think he has built right into the fabric of the universe, and he has built right into us. Now, getting there. Aye, there's the rub. And I think that has a lot to do with our expectations. So as I've said over and over and over again, I sure hope that I bridge across into that ultra-natural realm before I move on, because I know what's going to happen if I don't. I'm going to get to heaven and I'm going to look back on it and go, oh man, look. By the same token, I also recognize that if you do bridge into the ultra-natural realm, you've just caused like a whole other passel of interactions for yourself. I mean, glory. The things that would attempt to assault you and come after you, if you moved into that realm, would just be astonishing. But still, if it's available, wouldn't that be fascinating? This is Phil Ferrand. Sorry for the long one. I have made it home.